This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors.
Hello, Fred. Ernie from New York City. My question is about the newest thing we have happening in New York City, AM 88. WCBS is pushing WCBS FM HD3. They're saying that that's the new way to get a better sound. And I don't know if that has to do with more coverage, but I must ask, is this happening in other metro areas? What is the advantage? Do you need to get a new radio? How can you appreciate this supposed new sound? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hello to everybody on the DX Audio Service. This is Dale Hamm in Kansas City, Missouri. A couple of questions from the text can answer. Most AM receivers have a IF or something around 455 kilohertz. Mark Durenberger was mentioning something in the November issue about device, but what about this device on 455 kilohertz that you can hear on another receiver sometime? And the next question is, in the U.S. 48 states, not counting Alaska or Hawaii, what state has the least amount of AM stations? I'm kind of thinking it might be somewhere in the New England area or somewhere like that, but I'm not sure. I'm just curious. Thanks.
Hello, it's Mark Marino from Crystal Lake, Illinois, with two things about one station. First of all, 820 WCPT has been approved, apparently, for nighttime operation at a power level of 1,500 watts. The other news that is interesting is we suddenly have three new FM stations here broadcasting talk. WCPT 820 is now simulcast on 99.9 FM Park Forest, 92.7 FM Arlington Heights, and 92.5 FM in DeKalb.
Hey there, DXers. Josh Owens from Ruston, Louisiana, responding to Paul Burkhart's question about why certain areas have to have so many like stations. Well, in the two formats that you referenced, them being Spanish and religion, both those words in quotation, there are, even in every format, not just those two, there are formats within formats. I call them niche formats. I'm not sure if that's the correct term or not, but Spanish, there's a couple different types of Spanish music, and in the format, as you call it, religion, there are several different types. There, you have your contemporary, you have your more traditional, you have different other things like that, different types. So those, each station might be serving a niche format, and there's also competition. If you have more than one station in a niche format, they're competing against each other and probably getting better radio that way. Bye for now.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Bradford, Ontario. I picked up a great station this past Thursday, which would have been November 13th, on 980, and it was sandwiched between a station up here in London, of course, CFPL, and a 50,000-watt all-sports station in Washington, D.C., the Team 980. This was any time from about 4:30 to 6 in the evening. They were playing the country classics, and they had a special program saluting veterans, too. And the disc jockey that I heard on there said that it would make us think of the stations we used to take a radio in a bed with us with an earphone and listen to Nashville and Wheeling and Richmond, Virginia, as he mentioned it. But I wasn't able to get where it was from. We think it might have been somewhere down in maybe West Virginia or somewhere like it. So if anybody knows about this, and tell me about it in case I can't get it again. I hope I can. A couple of passings to report that I hate to have to, but on November the 5th of this year, Norm Marshall died. He was with CHML Hamilton for 30 years or more. He did everything there. He was their sports director. He also anchored news on Channel 11 TV there, and he was the radio voice of the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the Canadian Football League for a long time, and he also did a brief stint for the Toronto Argonauts when they were on CHFI back in the late 60s. And in Cleveland, Norm was 89. In Cleveland this past Wednesday, November 12th, Herb Score, and I knew Herb personally. I knew Mr. Marshall personally, too. Herb was 75. He spent 34 years with the Cleveland Indians between being a left-handed pitcher and a great one until a bad accident, being hit by a line drive, shortened his career. But he was a broadcaster for a long time, too, with a lot of the great ones there, Bob Neal and Joe Tate, who is doing the basketball now, Nev Chandler, people like that.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. If you have something of note to tell us about, perhaps a DX catch, something about a new product that you've tested out, a new radio that you're interested in, or just simply want to tell us about what's going on with your radio hobby, give us a call on the Musings line. The telephone number is 360-469-0189. That's for DX Audio Service members only. Keep it brief and to the point. Make sure it's of interest to everybody on the audio service and not just to those who live in your community. Let's answer some questions. First of all, on WCBS HD3, that, sir, is IBOC. So you need a IBOC receiver to be able to receive that station. And whether or not the quality is better than traditional analog, well, the jury is out on that. Some people think it is. Personally, I don't. I hear the artifacts in the digital coding, and also it acts a lot like a cell phone or XM when you're driving in downtown building clusters where the signal will just drop out if it loses a signal. And personally, I can stand having a signal getting a little noisy as I'm driving amongst buildings, but when it just drops out completely for a few seconds at a time, that kind of bothers me, especially if it's a good tune that I'm tapping my toes to. On the subject of what state has the least number of AM stations, well, according to our friend John Bowker, he says that Rhode Island and Vermont is the correct answer. Rhode Island has 16 AM stations, and then Vermont has 18. But keep in mind that those numbers can vary depending upon stations changing all the time. So as of right now, it looks like Rhode Island and Vermont hold that coveted prize. And Dale, you asked about the 455 kilohertz IF. Well, looks like you and the rest of the class are going to have to stay after class here. Get your Braille writer out and your pad and paper and a pencil, and let me give you a little theory here from Dr. Fred on radios. Tuned circuits in radios have one severe limitation, and that is bandwidth. Now, without going into a complex explanation, let's just assume that the best response can be about 2% of the signal frequency. Now, in the early days of AM radio, circuits simply tuned straight across the frequency band of interest, as there weren't too many stations. Applying our 2% rule, we find that, say, 540 kilohertz, the bandwidth is 10.8 kilohertz. We would be able to receive a signal on this frequency without a great deal or little interference from adjacent channels. On the downside, if we wanted to receive a signal, say, on 1550 kilohertz, our bandwidth becomes 31 kilohertz, or spanning three channels. We would have little hope of satisfactorily receiving a signal because our bandwidth now also includes both adjacent channels, 1540 and 1560. So a method of receiving called superheterodyne was invented many, many years ago. Now, here is part of our receiver. We have what's called a local oscillator. It's sort of a mini transmitter where the incoming receive signal is mixed with this local oscillator. And as a result, four frequencies become available. First is the original radio signal that we're trying to listen to. Then there's the original local oscillator signal. Then there is the original radio signal plus the local oscillator signal. And finally, we have the original signal minus the local oscillator signal. Now, are you confused? Well, okay, consider this practical example of your little AM radio that you have in your hand right now. It's designed to receive from, about 540 to 1650 kilohertz. The local oscillator will always tune in tandem with the input section, and it's going to produce another signal at 995 to 2105 kHz. At all times, the difference frequency is a constant 455 kHz, or what is called the intermediate frequency, or IF. All other frequencies arising from this process are then filtered out of your radio. When you tune your radio, you're actually tuning the local oscillator, which is more correctly called a VFO, or variable frequency oscillator. But because we always have a constant difference frequency of 455 kHz, it's relatively easy to design and construct narrowband circuits to suit our requirements. It is in these circuits, the IF amplifier, that the greatest amplification occurs, and this is what makes or breaks the receiver's capability to receive a distant signal. Class dismissed.
Hello, DXers. Ken Onischuk back here in suburban Chicago, and I'm going to give you summer 08 ratings that I got off the internet, and I'm going to do 23 cities now, and I'll do the rest in December. So here we go. The top 10 came off the portable paper meters, the new system that's come out, and there's been some surprises on there too. So let's start out with, in the United States, of course, with New York. Top 40, WHTZ at 6. The number 1 AM in 4th place, WABC at 4.8. In 6th, WINS 1010 at 4.2. And number 12, 880 WCBS at 3.7. Out in Los Angeles, number 1, top 40, KIIS-FM 5.9. Number 1 AM in 3rd, 640 KFI at 4.2, way down to 17th, KABC 79 at 2.5 up, and 19th, KFWB at 2.2. In Chicago, number 1, News Talk 72, WGN at 6.9, number 2, News Radio 78, WBBM at 5.6 up, number 4, WLS at 4.5, and number 5, the WLS Oldies, same 4.5, AM and FM. And in 18th, Sports 67, the Score, SCR 2.4. San Francisco, San Jose Bay Area. Number 1, News Talk 810, KGO at 6.5. Number 3, 740 News, KCBS at 5.4. And 8th, Sports 68, KNBR at 3.5. Next, Houston, a big FM market. Number 1, Black Adult, KMJQ at 6.2. Number 1, AM and 4th, KTRH at 5.1, followed by a whole list of FM stations down there. Next, pay-per-view meter is Philadelphia. Number 1, Pop Adult WBEB 8.1. Number 1 AM is 1060 KYW 2nd at 6.5. In 5th place, Voice of the World Champ Phillies WPHT 1210 at 5 up. And Sports 610 WIP was 16th at 2.9. Next in 5th, Dallas-Fort Worth area, number 1, Black Adult, KKDA-FM at 5.6, number 1 AM in 6th place, 82, WBAP at 3.7, next in 19th is the Voice of the Rangers, 1080 KRLD at 1.9. Number 8, Atlanta, number 1, Black Adult, WVEE at 10.1 up. Number 2, 750, WSB Atlanta hasn't lost a beat in the ratings, really up there at 7.6. And in 17th, the Voice of the Brave, 640 WGST at 2 up. 9th, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Number 1, Black Adult, Howard University Radio, WHUR at 6.4, though down. Number two, News Radio, WTOP-FM, 6.3. In eighth, number one, AM, in eighth, 630 WMAL, a 3.3 down. The baseball team Nationals were not even listed. Number nine, Boston, number one, News Talk, 1030 WBZ at 6.4. In fifth place, the number one AM, 680 WRKO at 4.7 down. In seventh, the voice of the Red Sox, Sports 85 WEEI at 4.4. Next, I stop in Convention City, Pittsburgh. Hello, John Malachy, number one, Classic Rock, WDVE at 9.1. Number two, regardless, 1020, KDKA at 8.3 up. Number three, Voice of the Pirates, WPGB at 6.5. And 13th, Adult Standards, WJAS 3. Next, 11th, Detroit, number one, Black Adult, WMXD at 5.9 up. Number two, way still up there, 760 WJR at 5.6. Number sixth place, News 95 WWJ at 5%. And 23rd is Sports 1130 WDFN at 0.8. 12th place, Miami. We have two DXers down there. Number one, Black Adult WHQT at 6%. Number one, AM in 12th. WIOD 610 at 2.6, and 23rd only, 560 WQAM at 1.3. 14th, Seattle, number one country, KMPS FM at 4.6 down. Number two, News Talk 1000, KOMO, the voice of the Mariners at 4.2. Number seventh, News Talk 71, KIRO at 3.7. In 10th, Talk 77, KTTH at 3.5 up. 15th, Phoenix, Arizona, number one, News Talk 55, KFYI at 5.3. Number two, Cool Oldies FM at 5.1. 17th, Voice of the Diamondbacks 62, KTAR at 2.3 down. 16th, Mark Durenberger territory, Minneapolis, St. Paul, number one, KQRS at 8.9 down. Third place, 830 WCCO at 6.4. And in eighth place, the voice of the Twins, 1500 KSTP at 4.3. 17th, San Diego, growing city, number one, News Talk 600, KOGO at 5.6. Number two, Smooth Jazz, KIFM at 4.6 down. Number seventh, News Talk 76, KFNB at 3.8. 23rd, Voice of the Padres, 1090 XPRS, 1.7 up. 18th, Tampa St. Pete, number one, Pop, WDUVFM, 7.7, down 2.6. Number two, 970 WFLA, 6.2 up. 18th, Sports 620 WDAE at 2. And in 21st, the voice of the American League champion Rays, WHNZ at 0.9 up. 20th, St. Louis, as usual, the King, 1120 KMOX at 7.7 up. Number 2, Pop, KEZK at 6.1. Number five, News Talk 55, KTRS, Voice of the Cardinals, 4.5 down, and then a whole list of FMs after that. Number one, 21, Baltimore. Number one, ERQ, Black Adult Station, 10.5 up. Number five, News Talk 1090, WBAL at 5%. And sixth, News Talk 68, WCBM. About the same. And in 10th, Talk, WHFS, Voice of the Orioles at 2.3. Number 22, Denver. Number 1, the Voice of the Rockies, 850 KOA at 6.9 up. Number 2, Rhythmic, KQKS at 5.9. In 10th, News Talk 63, KHOW 3.4. and 20th Sports KKFN FM at 1.4. And finally, in Portland, Oregon, number one country, KWJJ FM 5.7. Third, News Talk 1190 KEX at 4.6 up. 11th, Talk 1080 KPOJ at 3.1. And 16th, News Talk 75 KXL at 2.7 down. That's it for now. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next month with more of Marbitrons. Take it away, Fred. Thanks for your time.
Three Easy Steps to Hitting Ultralight Home Runs by Gary DeBrock, Guy Atkins, and John Bryan. The following is one chapter of a four-part series detailing easy steps to hot-rodding the radio that is rapidly becoming a favorite amongst ultralight medium-wave DXers. Introduction. Since the beginning of the ultralight radio boom amongst AM radio DXers late last year, the relatively low cost and simplicity of pocket radios has spurred a related experimental boom in modifications. Hobbyists that were reluctant to tinker with their expensive communication receivers have no hesitation with their $20 to $50 ultralights. Although transoceanic medium-wave DXers developed the modifications outlined here, these modifications apply equally to domestic ultralight DXers seeking even more elusive DX catches as well. From the beginning of the ultralight movement, many DXers have longed for a modified ultralight that would give them an extra edge against propagation and QRM. Early efforts were made to modify the Sony SRF M37V and the Sanjian DT200VX units with narrow IF filters. But in the absence of sensitivity improvements, serious DX progress was elusive. Gary DeBrock, Gil Stacey, and several others attempted, somewhat successfully, to address the sensitivity challenge with monster loop sticks being transplanted or coupled inductively into the SRF 39FP and the DT200VX units. In the absence of selective improvements, extreme difficulty in the case of the SRF 39FP, again, the overall improvement in DXability was quite limited. Finally, in the early spring, serious tinkering began on an ultralight radio that was destined to provide the breakthrough that DXers had been waiting for. The stock E100 is undoubtedly the most DX-capable ultralight pocket radio and was one of the top two performers in the recent Ultralight Radio Summertime Shootout, posted in the Ultralight Files area at http://www.dxer.ca. The modest low-band sensitivity of the E100 allowed the new DT400W to edge it out for overall top honors, although the in-stock form of the E100 would still be the preferred choice for 9 kHz split DXers and domestic IBOC Dodgers. Urban DXers, with many locals, will also find it superior in selectivity and crunch-resisting front end essential for producing DX sessions. As one of the two top performers in the shootout, the E100 desirably is unsurpassed for these groups, and it was very competitive even for the general ultralight domestic DXing group. The stock loopstick's low-band sensitivity limitation is an unfortunate aberration in the otherwise superbly capable stock E100 design, and was one of the top priorities for immediate replacement by our modification group. The E100's 1 kHz tuning steps, 200 memories, and fairly decent stock selectivity provided an immediate advantage over all other ultralights in split-frequency DXing on the coast. Its general DXing attributes also made it very attractive for domestic DXers throughout North America. The three of us, Gary DeBrock, John Bryant, and Guy Atkins, are all experienced tinkerers, and we were eager to make the E100 much more effective. We had the advantage of living near each other in Washington State, and also the advantage of complimentary experience in multiple IF filter modifications, that is, Guy has that, and multiple loopstick modifications, well, that's Gary and John. After some discussions online, we decided to try to maximize the E100's basic signal gathering capabilities through a variety of antenna modifications, using various ferrite bar substitutes, and providing for the use of a normal outside antenna. If possible, we also hoped that Guy could lead us in developing a substitute for the stock IF filter to significantly improve the selectivity of the radio. Although we were focused on these developments primarily for use in trans-Pacific DXing, each is equally useful in domestic DXing and in this IBOC challenging era. Since Gary had extensive experience transplanting large loopsticks into smaller radios, he led our efforts there, with John assisting. One of the earliest innovations that both of us tried was using a 7.5 inch by 0.5 inch Amidon loopstick and a new coil of Lintz wire together as a complete replacement for the E100's small stock bar and coil. This is an easy substitution made for major improvements in signal gathering. The real innovation, though, was allowing DXers to slide this coil back and forth along the bar as they DX to absolutely peak the E100 for the desired signal. The slider was born and is likely headed for the DX Portable Hall of Fame. It really works and is unbelievably easy to create and install. Building the E100 slider is the subject of the second article in our series. After the first 7.5 inch slider, all three of us went on to create a monster slider of 27 inch long and 1 inch in diameter. Information on these behemoths will soon be available in the ultralight file section of DXER.ca. Razor sharp selectivity is essential in front ranked DX receivers, whether for slicing off weak transoceanic signals from close by North Americans or sliding off to one side of a domestic DX target to avoid the accursed IBOC buzz or local splatter on the other side. After John and Gary both had success in refining the slider loopstick, we approached Guy for his help in developing a suitable 455 kHz IF filter upgrade. Guy has years of experience in receiving filter upgrades. After a good bit of research, Guy suggested an E100 filter modification based on a premium Murata ceramic filter. 2.3 kHz nominal, 2.9 kHz typical bandwidth. It is the same premium filter that is used in the vaunted Eaton E1 portables and has a somewhat premium price reflecting its high performance, around $50. Guy then developed a fairly simple installation procedure that puts this larger filter neatly inside the crowded E100 cabinet. We have all three now using this filter modification in both domestic and transoceanic venues, and think that it is an absolute wonder, increasing both selectivity and signal-to-noise ratios. Performing the Murata filter mod is the subject of a third in our series article. Stand by, it's a winner. Although most DXers use ultralights as portable radios as they were intended, John has been interested in testing the limits of this simple single conversion circuit as a tabletop mainline DX receiver, hooked to a Sirius outside antenna from a normally computer-laden DX shack. John was successful in developing two simple techniques for doing just that, and he's been happily DXing away ever since with his E100 hooked to beverages, large loops, and a Wellbrook phased array. his simple mods for attaching an outside antenna directly to the E100 and similar radios are the subject of a fourth and last in our series article. So that's our plan for the next three articles. Take each of you through two fairly simple steps and one, the IF filter, more complex step that will turn an under $50 radio, stock ultralight, into a DX hungry wildcat. One precaution, all of our modifications can be accomplished on the E100s with serial numbers prior to E10-07090, followed by four digits. E100s were radically changed after that serial number and are not amenable to modification. Moving from broadcast radio to shortwave, there was an interesting article in the Toledo Blade from November 23rd, the Sunday section, titled, Radio Free Europe is Still Making a Difference in the World. And this is by Kathleen Parker, a member of the Washington Post Writers Group. For those of you that like listening to shortwave, this is kind of an interesting article. It goes on like this. From Washington, the word is powerful. In fact, one might say the word is power. No one is more acutely aware of this than Jeffrey Gedman, president of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. Yes, it's still around. The Cold War that prompted the creation of Radio Free Europe may have ended, and the wall did come tumbling down, but the voices of liberty still travel over the airwaves, the old-fashioned way, as well as via television, internet, and even text messaging, to reach pockets where freedom is uncommon currency. Today, the non-profit, U.S.-funded RFE reaches 30 million people in 28 languages in 20 countries, including Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Russia, and Central Asian republics, all for the relatively low price of $83 million. That is approximately the cost of four Apache helicopters and inarguably provides a significant bang for the buck. Quote, give me the equivalent of six Apaches and we'd probably change the world, unquote, says Mr. Gedman over coffee while in Washington this week. There's something charming, even quaint, about the notion of RFE, Radio Free Europe, which was created in 1949 to broadcast news and current events to countries behind the Iron Curtain. In 1975, RFE merged with Radio Liberty, which has been broadcasting to listeners inside the Soviet Union since 1951. There's nothing charming, however, about the need that still drives the enterprise. Millions of people without access to information that isn't state-controlled. Mr. Gedman, who took over RFE back in 2007 after a stint with the Aspen Institute in Berlin, has hundreds of stories about RFE's works of, quote, public diplomacy, unquote. To those who tune in, that disembodied voice from afar can be a literal lifeline or a path to justice. Call it, quote, sleepless in Sherbagam, unquote. Here are two quick takes from Afghanistan, where RFE and RL boast a 60.6% market share. Story number one. A couple of months ago, when a young girl was raped, a common and underreported event, the president of Afghanistan heard about it on RFE and instructed his staff to get details. As a result, the girl and her family were provided assistance, and the government demonstrated a strong position against the all-too-common trend of older men raping girls with impunity. Number two, In Kabul, the parents of a critically ill girl called the radio station when all else failed. Voila! Doctors materialized. Contrary to misperceptions that began decades ago, RFE and RL is not a propaganda arm of the CIA, though the CIA did, for a time, channel some funding from Congress. That arrangement ended back in 1971. Nor does Mr. Gidman's crew try to spread anti-Muslim messages, as some critics have suggested. That is, unless one considers it anti-Muslim to insist that women not be stoned or that gay teens not be hanged. Mr. Gidman describes his own philosophy as paternal liberalizationism. Otherwise, RFE and RL is a news organization like any other that reports on events and issues including women's rights. This is not pleasing to everyone. In Afghanistan, Taliban insurgents routinely attack radio towers and insist on equal time for their doubtless heartwarming messages. In Iran, the government jams the signal, except between midnight and 6 a.m., a money-saving strategy, and tries to intimidate the 40 Iranian correspondents who live and work in Prague. The Iranian journalists often receive letters ordering court appearances and fines, followed by threats to confiscate family members' homes in Iran. Last year, correspondent Parnaz Azimah, a beloved Iranian scholar best known for translating Ernest Hemingway, was detained for several months when she returned to Iran for a visit. The Iranian government finally released Ms. Azimah, who holds dual U.S.-Iranian citizenship, but erected bureaucratic obstacles to prevent her from visiting her elderly mother. If she returns, in all likelihood, she would be arrested for such crimes as reporting on sensitive stories. Ms. Azimah, Mr. Gidman says, is Iran's worst nightmare, a woman with standing who refuses to play by their rules. Keeping voices such as Ms. Azimah's free and available to others is a continuing challenge as Congress weighs spending priorities. Relatively speaking, $83 million is peanuts, as is the total sum of $800 million, less than the cost of one stealth bomber, that America spends on all international broadcasting efforts. Mr. Gidman, who is one of the signatories to a 1998 letter urging President Bill Clinton to overthrow Saddam Hussein, is hardly a touchy-feely guy. But he appreciates that the war of ideas is best fought with the, quote, weapon of the word, unquote. Give that man six Apaches.
امریکا به بهانه بن لادن افغانستان را اشغال کرد و به پاکستان هم دست درازی می کند.
مطلب را درباره نقشه آینده پاکستان شنیدید. ساعت 5:30 دقیقه به وقت کابل است و حالا فشرده خبرهای افغانستان و جهان با آرش همایون.
حامد کرزی رئیس جمهور افغانستان حکم تشدید مبارزه علیه فساد اداری را در آن کشور صادر نمود.
In that article, an editorial was by Kathleen Parker, a member of the Washington Post Writers Group. A couple of letters from DX Audio Service members asked if the pirate radio stations also occupy frequencies on AM and FM, in addition to the shortwave, which we talked about a couple issues past. And I'll update you on some shortwave stuff in just a few seconds. But yes, the pirate stations tend to congregate on the AM band on 1600 up to 1710. I have heard one station on 1720, but that's very rare. Most of them hang out between 1600 and 1710. You very seldom hear one down in the meat of the broadcast band between 540 and 1600, simply because a lot of pirate stations are low power with very ineffective antennas, and it's kind of hard to compete with all the big guns on the AM band. On FM, most of them seem to congregate down in the educational portion of the FM band, and that's typically just because it's a little less congested than the normal 92.1 up to 107.9. I have heard of a few stations going below the FM band or just above. Going above is very risky because then you get into the aviation portion of the frequencies that are used by aircraft, and the FAA usually tracks them down pretty quick if they catch a pirate radio station on the air. However, there have been some stations down at 87.9 and 87.7. Very rarely, though. And I'm sure Mike Lance could probably tell some stories about all the pirates on the FM band down there in Miami. On the shortwave band, there's been a few interesting stations pop up that I've heard, such as The Wave on 6925, and they tend to broadcast in upper sideband. Most of them, I've not heard too many AM stations, or that is amplitude modulation. Most of them are upper sideband. And there's also been Captain Morgan Radio on 6923.7, as well as, WTKY at 6925. And that's pretty much it. They tend to be right around just below 7 megahertz. And if you have a decent shortwave portable, the best time to give a listen is usually in the evening time, just at sunset, and you might hear a couple stations pop in, usually between 6.92 and 6.95 is where you're going to hear most of those stations. And you'll hear such stations as Radio Azteca, Wolverine Radio, Old Turkey Radio, James Bond Radio, just about anything. So give a listen and see if you can report on something that you might heard. Well, unless you're living in a hole, you know that the car industry is kind of in the dumps, and the economy overall is not doing so good. So what about radio? In a MSNBC article titled "Radio Industry Heads for a Shakeout" by J. Scott Trubley, we find out a little bit of this information. The faltering economy is hitting the radio industry on all fronts, and a dean of the Atlanta radio market says that it's the most challenging time broadcasters have faced in more than 20 years. Lou Dickey Jr., CEO of Atlanta-based Cumulus Media Incorporated, said sputtering advertising plus the upheaval in the stock market will cause a major shakeup in the landscape of broadcast radio over the next several years. Quote, "I think there's going to be a pretty big shakeout, and I think that half of the companies in business today will be gone within 36 months, unquote, Dickey said. Cumulus is the nation's second largest broadcaster with 344 stations owned and operated. Atlanta is the nation's seventh largest radio market, according to Arbitron. Many radio companies are steeped in debt following the consolidation rush in the late 1990s and early 2000s and are witnessing precipitous declines in advertising as the economy falls toward recession. The radio industry was down 11% in August and 8% in September, according to radio analysis C.L. King & Associates of New York. The fourth quarter will be just as bad, if not worse. Ad revenues from car dealers, automakers, the housing industry, and the financial sector are down sharply for broadcasters across the country," Dickey said. "The Atlanta market, which enjoyed years of housing boom, has been especially hard hit by the fallout of the mortgage industry," radio executives said. The stock values of radio companies have plummeted in the past year as investors pull out of the stock market. The downturn, however, only accelerated after Wall Street's collapse. Stock in Cumulus Media, a NASDAQ company, broke a buck on November the 11th and rested at 54 cents a share on November the 18th. Its 52-week high had been $9.42. Atlanta-based Cox Radio Incorporated on the NYSE has seen stocks slide from a 52-week high of $13.09 to around $4. Las Vegas-based Citadel Broadcast Group on the NYSE and Washington, D.C.-based Radio One Incorporated on the NASDAQ now sell for about a quarter a share. Some have fallen even lower. Many companies, including Cumulus Media, now have market capitalizations of around $20 million or less. Ad revenues, the lifeblood of media companies, and earnings overall are down industry-wide, which could trigger weaker companies, covenants, and creditors. Cox saw its third-quarter net income slip 21%, with stations in Atlanta, Orlando, Miami, and Southern Connecticut and Jacksonville, Florida, posting revenue drops. Cox has $415 million in debt, but has a $185 million credit facility and isn't in danger of triggering covenants, according to an earnings report. Cumulus turned a $6 million profit in the third quarter after posting a $70 million loss a year ago, mainly due to non-cash charges, but revenues were off by 5%. Dickey said the company projects the fourth quarter will be down 9% to 11%. So with all this upheaval in the markets, maybe this is the time to start looking at buying some stock in radio stations, or maybe even standing by, you might be able to buy a station for a song. Well, that's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service, and that's it for 2008. I look forward to seeing all of you in 2009 with more of the DX Audio Service. And until next time, 73, good DX, get out and support radio. And from my family to yours, happy holidays.